Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I love the classic Spielberg wonder in this. He has such an unreal way to get wondrous stuff happening on the screen, whether it's, you know, Alan Grant in Jurassic Park seeing the dinosaurs for the first time, or Indy discovering where the tomb is. Like, he's so good at nailing that. And the imagery of the World War II planes and the boat, and then the, you know, the ending, the spaceships, the design. I mean, it has not dated at all. It looks flawless. The bright geometric shapes of the ships flying around the Indiana desert. All of that was unreal. What I liked less was how they spent the majority of the time essentially following a dad who has a full-on breakdown and leaves his family to run away with aliens.
Hello, film fans. Thanks for listening today. Joining us today, we have Paul.
Hello.
Ben.
Hi there.
And Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to review Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Director's cut.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. In the FlixWatcher remote recording studio today, we have Paul and Ben. If you could please say hi to the listeners and tell them a little bit about the podcast you do, please.
Yeah, so my name's Ben. I am a cinema manager by day. By night, my alter ego of annoying podcaster who decided starting a podcast during lockdown like everyone else was a good idea, but actually it's all right. And that's when I do Have You Seen This with my fellow co-host Paul.
Hello, yes. I'm also a cinema general manager. We work for the Picture House cinema chain. I'm down in Exeter. Yay. And Mr. Mercer's over there in Greenwich in London, in the big shiny city. And so we just decided we wanted to talk about films because we love movies.
That's what we did.
Yeah, good enough.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to say, as we're recording, the cinemas are open in the UK and seem to be thriving. And one thing, I think most people have listened to this podcast for more than three episodes and then I'm a big fan of Pitch House, and in particular Pitch House Central is my favourite baby.
One of the best cinemas in the UK. It is honestly outstanding.
But I'm closest now to Crouch End Pitch House, and that was when I went to see Tenet there. I was like, this will do nicely, sir. Thank you.
Mine ones are the South London ones, so the Ritzy, and now local now is the West Norwood one, which is kind of like a very strange building. It's like the old library, and the building, that one's great. So
the ceiling of the foyer of that was used in Clockwork Orange.
Oh, I think. Serious?
Is it that one?
It's screen one. Oh, two. Well, but it's basically it's an octagon, and there is actually a plaque outside the screen that says this is where Clockwork Orange was filmed, and some of the seats in the auditorium are orange to celebrate that fact. So, just something that Picture House does. A bit of fun with film.
I'm glad you're open again.
Thank you. So are we.
Well, let's extend that fun talking about films. We are here talking about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is your choice, Paul.
It is.
And you did stress the director's cut. So can you tell us why you want us to watch this and the director's cut in particular? And then we'll have 60 seconds or less to tell us the synopsis.
Sure. So I'm old, comparatively to everybody else. So I saw this movie when it opened in 1977 in the UK. So, and it blew my tiny little mind at the time. And it's a film, it just got in there, and I've loved it ever since, and seen all the various iterations when the studio insisted they wanted a special edition created to show the inside of the mothership at the end. which Spielberg agreed to at the time but didn't really want to do. But he did it so that they could create this other shot that he wanted to be in his initial release but couldn't afford to do at the time. So then ultimately Spielberg, being the wonderful man that he is and with the sort of power he wields in Hollywood, was able to create his definitive cut, the director's cut. So he got rid of the inside of the mothership shot, which he didn't really want, but did leave in the one shot that he was hoping to do, which is the sequence when they find the huge ship in the middle of the desert. So that was the additional scene that he wanted to do that he couldn't do, and that was retained. Because in the special edition, they cut out the sequence where he builds the Devil's Tower in his lounge. So all the sequence where he throws the stuff in through the windows, you don't see any of that. You just see the shot of him in the house once he's created it. And all of that preamble is lost, and therefore the sequence with his wife leaving was all ditched because they wanted to show the inside of the spaceship. So I've seen the various iterations, and it's a film that's just struck me at the time and just stuck with me. And much to Mr. Mercer and Mr. Hammond's chagrin, Richard Dreyfuss is one of the best screen actors that's ever lived, and I tend to go on about incessantly, and his performance in this movie is amazing. So it's a film that's just stuck with me from a very early age, the concept of it, the scale of it, but the intimacy of it as well. And it, for me, I can just watch and watch, and I could probably recite the entire script.
And can you tell us the synopsis with its timer starting now?
Okay, so this is the story of an electrical engineer who sees his life changed dramatically as a result of an encounter of the first kind with a UFO.
Short and sweet, love it.
All right, let's go to Ben and Helen for their initial thoughts. Helen, how many times have you seen this film, if at all, before this?
So this is a film that I always feel like I've seen it like loads and loads and loads of times, but I think I've only seen it maybe once all the way through. And there's so many things that I really, really love about it. I love like the child acting in this. I think, is it Barry? The little kid, Barry?
Yeah.
He's great, like, Spielberg has just got one of those ways with children, child actors, that you just don't really see that often. And the score, the John Williams score, is amazing. And all the kind of like motifs of the music, all the way it kind of like builds up until like, you know, the big music scene. And Roy's first kind of encounter where he's in his truck and how it shifts and moves and that whole experience. And you feel like you're all kind of like inside it. But then there's lots of other things. So you talking about this is how I feel about E.T. And I kind of feel that not having seen this as much as E.T. or having kind of like everything built, my childhood built around kind of E.T. and those experiences, when I watch this, I kind of go, kind of feels a little bit like a prototype E.T. testing out little things. He's testing out kind of the sci-fi. He's kind of like, this is like the adult interaction with aliens type thing. But you know, with E.T., I kind of want to bring it back to the kids because kids are like my thing. And so there's bits like that. And I feel as though I really, 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 really want to love it as much as E.T., but my heart just isn't there. So I really want my heart to feel like it does when you talk about it. But I think it's a little bit long, and I'm not sure it's aged as well as maybe some of his other films have. But there's lots that I really, really love about it. And the thought of having seen that in like the 70s would obviously like completely blow your mind. In the same way like mine was blown in the 80s when I was like, oh, E.T., like he's real. He must be real.
What are your thoughts then, Ben?
I think I'm like in the same bag. I've only seen it like once before properly, and that was probably on a DVD at university. So this was like, it was the first time I've watched this film. And there are things that work in it 100%. Like, I love the classic Spielberg wonder in this. He has such an unreal way to get just wonderment and wondrous stuff happening on the screen, whether it's, you know, Alan Grant in Jurassic Park seeing the dinosaurs for the first time, or Indy discovering where the tomb is. Like, he's so good at nailing that. And the imagery of the World War II planes and the boat, which is interesting to hear, that was an additional scene. Seeing that's imagery is so iconic. And then just having all the people sort of react to it going, this is absolutely, you know, why is this happening? And they're all getting really excited about it. And then the, you know, the ending, the spaceships, the design, it has not dated at all. It looks flawless. The bright geometric shapes of the ships flying around the Indiana desert, just all of that was unreal. I loved all of that. What I liked less was how it spent the majority of the time essentially following a dad who has a full-on breakdown and leaves his family to run away with aliens. Like, the two narratives of, like, the MIB government stuff and that just really didn't gel whatsoever. And I can't believe this film is a PG, because that moment you talked about where he's having the meltdown outside, sort of Jack Nicholson style in The Shining, like, just grabbing all the elements, grabbing the chicken wire, like, my anxiety levels went through the roof. Like, and then his wife leaves him, not surprised, totally justified doing that. And then, yes, the child abduction scene, that child acting is amazing, but the actual scene where the child is abducted by the aliens, that was terrifying. Like, properly, like, scary stuff. So, yeah, there's elements in this that really, really work, and then the other elements just, I don't know, it just feels like a mixed bag, very tonally odd. Dreyfuss at some points is almost playing it for laughs, like it's slapstick. I do like his performance, but I think that maybe there was a direction to, you know, go a bit crazy with it. Yeah, a very odd film.
This is definitely the second time I've seen this, and it's one of those films that had, it's kind of always built up for me. It's like, oh, this is, you must see this, the alien scene, and this is amazing. And I don't know, I'm sure I saw it after like Jurassic Park and that kind of stuff. And as a kid, I'd seen like dinosaurs come to life. And this, for me, when I was maybe 12 or 13, it was just like, when are we going to see the aliens? obviously, as a grown-up now, I can see the nuances, or the less subtle nuances of a man going into the pits of despair, trying to find where his mind was taken that during that first encounter, and similarly with other people. And I like the thing of this kind of Nirvana, Devil's Peak, where suddenly people see it on the TV and they're all kind of drawn towards it. Some of it's amazing, and I think I wish I'd just seen it, you know, way back when, because I think they just think, and I'm not that big a fan of E.T., so I'm not on Helen's side of that, she knows this, sorry. I think there's some things that astound with it, and generally, like this, when he has the first encounter and the car kind of turns around, and I love that kind of shit, when it's all done in camera, and that kind of stuff is brilliant, the camera, even things like the flashlight going off. I really love that kind of scene, and the Cotopaxi and where they've been. And then when they reunite at the end, those lost pilots, beautiful. But for some reason, it just doesn't really kind of gel with me. And I don't know why. Maybe just because I was bored that first time. And I think it's sometimes the first time you watch something kind of colours your experience, so it doesn't, it's going forward. How old are you, Paul, when you first saw it then?
When I saw it, I was 8.
Okay.
When I first saw it in 77. So yeah, it's difficult. I understand what you're saying about not necessarily understanding the motivations of Roy Neary, the Richard Dreyfuss character, because it's, I read in an article, Spielberg said that it possibly, when he got to the point of doing E.T., he wasn't a family man before he went to do E.T. And he said if he was remaking Close Encounters now, the script would have been different, because ultimately he leaves his family and the planet. You know, he happily leaves them behind, and he probably wouldn't make that film now in the same way, because he's a family man and his sensibilities are very different. So it's quite interesting, I think, that sort of jumps out for you. And I think you're right, Kobe, sometimes it is the first watch that it ingrains in you a perception of it if you were to watch it again. And I think because I loved it at that time, I think that's why it stayed with me. I don't know, there's some just really stupid little moments in it that are wonderful. There's a tiny little shot, and it's a nod to his mate George Lucas, when the mothership first appears, and there's a close-up shot of it just beginning to rise up, very close-up shot, and you see a very small portion of the ship as it starts to go over Devil's Tower, and there's an R2-D2 upside down on the ship. There's a little nod to him. But Spielberg did very well out of the movie, because he and George Lucas had a bet, basically against their own films, where they would give 2.5% of the profits of each of their films to each other, whichever one grossed the most. And George Lucas came up with this tiny little film called Star Wars that he bought out, that he bet against. And obviously Spielberg cashed in quite significantly as a result with the amount of money that film made.
That's good. They need more money. That's great. Good for them.
This is back in 77.
I find that period of film history like brilliant, because Spielberg had come out with Jaws, which he was shitting himself about. Lucas had come with absolutely bricking himself about Star Wars, and Star Wars was going nowhere until Spielberg said, "Hey, you John Williams is a great composer," and that's the kind of thing that brings it all together. So I love the fact that these guys along with Francis Ford Coppola as well, and another guy I can't remember. They were just friends together, and they made these ridiculous films. But I think for me, it's like seeing Jaws for the first time versus seeing this for the first time. You know, hands down, is like Jaws is for me the film that grabs my attention. Yeah. And
yeah, Jaws is my favourite film of all time. So sure. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It's just as a concept thing, because Richard Dreyfuss wasn't the original choice for Roy Neary.
Is he ever the original choice?
I don't know. It seems to be the list of names that apparently were approached. For Steve McQueen was the first person that was approached play the character, but he turned it down because he said he couldn't cry on screen, and he thought this character needed to be able to cry on screen, so that's why he turned it down. Apparently, they offered it to Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, Jack Nicholson, Gene Hackman, and James Caan before they got to Richard Dreyfuss. So you've had a much different film that would have been. And apparently a young Meryl Streep just out of drama school auditioned for the part of Ronnie near his wife. But obviously, it ultimately went to Terry Garr. This was before Meryl Streep was a name. So how different a film would that have been with Al Pacino giving his hoo-wah on screen at the Aliens as they came out?
Interesting. I think he's a perfect choice because this film, for me, feels the most like Spielberg on screen. Like, I think Roy Neary is the closest to Spielberg putting himself on screen, and kind of he looks and kind of how he feels, and like the whole story was inspired by like his parents like waking him up at night and driving him to this meteor shower. And I kind of think that this is how Spielberg in the 70s, before he kind of had to rein in his visions a little bit and had been burnt a little bit by certain projects, I feel as this is how he would have reacted to the aliens. And the whole thing about leaving your family to go and like off on a spaceship is something I feel like Spielberg would have done then at that age that he was making kind of the films, having like read stuff about him. It feels very much like that in that.
Yeah, and it's very much, there's the Pinocchio motif that runs through the film, and the When You Wish Upon a Star song, which John Williams brilliantly weaves into his music during the end credits. I think you're right, it's Spielberg was, yeah, he was a guy that would wish on a star. He was that type of guy back then, definitely. Yeah.
What do you guys reckon of Barry's mum's and her storyline in there? Because for me, there's a clear kind of distinction. Both driven for separate reasons. I don't think if Barry hadn't been abducted, I think she would have probably stayed at home. Whereas he was kind of there's a single mindedness to him, which I can see being kind of off putting.
He was running away from his family, and she was running back to her family. Even though it was just obviously only her son, so yeah, there's that just juxtaposition. But she had no intention of doing anything other than getting her son back. Yeah. He seemed to be doing the complete opposite; that he was able to break that tether and commit to doing something completely different. And I like that juxtaposition.
The whole sequence of them going climbing up Devil's Rock was very weird, culminating in their kiss, which I think was very misjudged. And the character, a character just dies sort of red shirt style, just to prove how serious the situation is, and they don't even go, oh, Johnny's gone. Oh, well, come on, let's carry on. Very odd. Do you think he was in a loveless, doomed relationship before the aliens made him want to leave it? Or do you think the aliens are entirely responsible for breaking up the marital bliss? Although it wasn't marital bliss, it looked like a hellhole. No. Kids were just chucking stuff around.
Classic Spielberg dysfunctional family.
Yeah, definitely.
But why does it work in E.T. but it didn't work in this?
I think he just got years of experience in terms of his life experience had changed. So when it came to E.T., he was a more consummate filmmaker, storyteller, and human being. I think he just had those years to develop. You know, if he was filming in, what, it would have been 75, 76 for a 77 release. Was it E.T. 82? 1982, I think?
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. Several years of life experience to draw on to develop as a professional and as a human being, and I think that's where it started to show.
Is there anything else we want to say, guys, before heading to the scores?
The child abduction, which if you've ever seen Poltergeist, which Spielberg was a producer, I think, or original idea, a lot of that kind of pops up with that. Which Poltergeist, I think, I've seen a lot more, and probably perhaps before this. So in my head, it was quite confusing watching the kind of like the abduction and kind of like the house thing and going, this isn't Poltergeist. Stop thinking it's Poltergeist. Like, this is different. Not the TV. He's going somewhere else. Something.
Is it scary as Poltergeist then? Helen?
I guess, yeah, possibly. It's that same kind of sinister thing, isn't it? Especially when she's trying to pull him back as he's being dragged. It's pretty terrifying, which he also does quite well. Like, child peril is one of his also tick box. Yes, child peril is a good thing. But
the sound design on that sequence is incredible as well. It's so loud. So loud, and it just just a cacophony of sound and different colours on screen. It's terrifying. Completely disorientating. Yeah.
I will say this: I do love how deeply uncynical the film is. Like, this was made at the height of the Cold War, and there isn't a whiff of from the American government that these might be naughty aliens, like the ones in Independence Day, and they're going to go around and smash up monuments. Like, they're fully on board. Like, these guys are good, even though they couldn't communicate with them. Somehow, they knew they were going to do a wife swap with all those astronauts, but. But I do like that they were just like, no, these aliens, they're good. They're the good aliens. Not like the bad ones from Attack the Block.
that's Spielberg, isn't that, really?
I did ask about director's cuts and alternate versions of films. Do you have any particular preferences? Do you need to watch certain versions of certain films, or are you just like, you'll take whichever one as it comes? Ben.
So with regard to Close Encounters, I think the original cut or the director's cut, I mean, there's only the addition of the one scene that's in there, so it's not going to change your viewing experience of it. But Blade Runner is the perfect example of a myriad of cuts. Again, I'm old enough that I saw the original theatrical cut when it came out in the cinema and have seen all the different versions of it. And again, it's the director's cut that is the better one, when the directors have been allowed the opportunity to put out the vision that they initially wanted without sort of the intrusion of the meddling by the studio. And so director's cuts, they will always pique my interest. And in my experience, they're in the main tend to be the better version.
Terminator 2, Aliens, extended ones.
Yeah.
The originals are great, but the kind of the couple of extra scenes in it just add that little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to mention the Snyder Cut here as a not a big fan of either of them, but the Snyder Cut I thought made sense.
I'm going to be the voice of contrarianism here and say that not all studio interference is necessarily a bad thing. Case in point, The Irishman, which was far too long. Richard Kelly's cut of Donnie Darko is not as good as the theatrical cut of that film. So I don't know, it's not always like a clear-cut thing, but yes, I suppose in general the director's cuts tend to be the more cohesive vision.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I think different films, people say certain cut is better than the other, and like I say, not necessarily the director's cut. I've yet to see the director's cut of Donnie Darko, because everyone says it just kind of removes the ambiguity from everything. But for that reason, I do need to find it. But also, I'm one of those people who really can't be bothered to see the difference. It's just kind of whichever one's available to me at the time. I go, yeah, I'll watch that one. That's fine. Because I'm still generally seeing like 90% of the film. Apart from, I think, the Snyder Cut, which is vastly different to others. Should we head to the scores?
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which coincidentally are on Netflix and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out. And when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
Welcome to the Spreadsheets of Dreams, where the FlixWatcher scores are housed in a secure unit to protect them from any wrongdoing. And they're, as always, out of five. And we'll start with you, please, Paul, with your recommendability.
Unsurprisingly, I'm going to go for a five, just because I adore this film. And I would it was one that immediately jumped to mind when you guys very kindly invited us to guest on your fantastic pod, because I really love sharing this film with people. So yeah, five.
Ben?
I mean, I would recommend people see it because there is some iconic imagery in this film that I think it's important to see, and certainly in the context of Spielberg's earlier work, and if you're a fan of Spielberg, then it is something you should tick off the list. So it's a 4 out of 5 for me.
Helen?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's so much going for it, and there's so much in it that has kind of inspired so much film that comes after it. Like, there's obvious influence on Arrival. I mean, you've probably seen like bits of it through The Simpsons. There's a famous Simpsons episode, The Clown School, where he makes mashed potato clown thingy. So there's things that, and you know, you've heard the tune and everything. And if you're kind of like thinking, oh, I sort of maybe seen it, not really sure, I would say it is worth revisiting. It's not my favorite, but I think it's an interesting piece in kind of like the Spielberg canon, and you kind of have to see it to kind of appreciate where he's kind of gone with it. So I'm going to give it a 4, but sort of saying, you know, there are bits of it that probably don't work, but if you've never seen it, then you do have to see it.
Yeah, I'm going to 3.8. I think you should watch it. If you're interested in film generally, you should absolutely see it. But I think compared to other things that Spielberg's done, for myself, and if you watch it for the first time with modern eyes, then it might seem a bit tame or heartless or something there that kind of might not resonate. Well, this is my experience. That's how I think. that's what I think.
It's just lacking momentum. It doesn't have the same momentum and pace as Jaws. Mm. I think that it just doesn't.
Repeat viewing score, Paul.
Well, I genuinely could recite this script from start to finish. I've seen it that many times. So it's your own film, so, and I don't want to come across as a complete arse about it, but I'm going to have to say 5 for me because of genuinely I couldn't tell you. I mean, it's countless times I've seen this. I mean, it must be, it's in the tens, possibly into, you know, closing on 100 times I've viewed this film. But again, as I said, I'm very old and got to see it when it originally came out. So it has to be a 5.
Yeah, no need to apologise for seeing a film many times. That's why it's all good, Ben.
I think it would be a 3. I think I probably will forget. I'm losing my mind and memory as I get older. And I probably will forget that I probably didn't have an amazing time the first time I watched it. I'd be like, do you know what? I should give another go. Close Encounters. So, 3 out of 5.
Helen.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm going to go for a 3 as well. I mean, it's a long one. You know, 2 hours, 20 minutes-ish is quite long, even by Spielberg standards. So it's not going to be a regular one. But yeah, I probably would watch it again. Not in a rush, but there are occasions, which I'll mention in the next score, where I probably would watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2.5, 2.5 here. I think I'd need to probably read a bit more about the film and everything and understand the story before I go back in there again. Because I think maybe part of it is just me not getting the subtext. Or maybe I'm getting the subtext and just thinking, nah. but I think I'd probably need to read more about it and understand it more before going back in there. Small screen score, Paul.
So for this one, obviously, it is a film that definitely works much better on the big screen. I can say that clearly, particularly the introduction of the mothership and the reveal of that at the end. I mean, it loses a lot on a TV screen, no matter how big your TV is. Mm. So, you know, I think I'd probably say a 3. I think for me, the human story works, and so that works very well on a small screen, but it loses that spectacle, particularly when you get to the grand reveal at the end. So yeah, 3.
Ben?
I'm going for a 1. This has to be seen in the cinema, and I'm really sorry to, I think you had Daryl on from the Is Paul Dano OK podcast, yeah, where he said he went to a cinema where they had their balls and feet out. I don't know what cinemas he's going to, but that's not a thing. Yeah, they
definitely not.
not a pitched house thing. I'd certainly put a stop to that on my usher check. Yeah, you have to see this on the cinema. And those elements, the bits where the ship starts to appear over Devil's Rock, I mean, astounding. So yeah, you have to see this in the cinema. The small screen, just, I don't know. I've got a good sized TV. It was good, but I'd love to see this in the cinema.
Helen?
Yeah, same, I think. I'll give it a 2. I think if I was to watch this again, it would be at a cinema. maybe not so much for the picture, but the shared experience and the sound as well. I think the sound, it would be, would cover up a lot of the things that I find a little bit iffy, just because I just really love the score and felt that that connected a bit more with me than sometimes what I was watching. So yeah, if I was to repeat view again, I would want to see it at a cinema or a big screen or an experience.
So was it 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going 1.5. It's, I think if I watch it again, it has to be at a cinema. And I'd like it to be like a Steven Spielberg retrospective. Not necessarily retrospective, that kind of implies that once he's passed away, but just going back and picking his best films. Because there's so many of his films I haven't seen in cinema, and films I have seen like only once at Jurassic Park. And I think if there's other ones that they were showing, I'd definitely go and watch this as well. Yeah. But I can't see myself watching it at home on my TV screens or through to iPad.
You never know. Spielberg might end up being part of our Picture House Rediscover series. Ah. It may end up turning up on that. You never know.
That's something you're going to champion, is it?
Why not?
Yeah, lots of films Spielberg in his catalogue that I'd want to revisit. Yeah, on the big screen.
Engagement score, Paul.
Well. Okay, it has to be. I have to say 5. But I can't have sort of waxed rhapsodic about this film and then score it down from there. I genuinely love this film, and I am, from the moment it starts to the moment it finishes, I'm 100% there. So it has to be 5 for me. Has to be.
Ben.
Yeah, 3 out of 5. I was intrigued while watching it, but Helen's absolutely right. It's too long. And as we were saying earlier on, the pace is just off. So yeah, 3 out of 5. It was, yeah.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm a 3 as well. I actually had to watch it twice because the first time I tried to watch it, I ended up having a little bit of a snooze. So I was like, kind of like watching it, and I was like, pretty sure something's going to happen soon. And then I woke up and they were kind of like on Devil's Tower. I was like, oh, I'm not sure how much I've missed, but something's happening now. So yeah, I can't really give it that much higher than a 3.
Yeah. I'll go for 3 as well.
That's a good sound.
Things like this, I feel I need to apologise to the person who shares
the The great thing about the arts is that it's completely subjective, and that's what's wonderful about the arts.
Yes.
You can sit next to somebody who's hating something whilst you're absolutely loving it, and that's the beauty of the arts, whatever that is, whether it's film, sculpture, paintings, whatever. And so there's never anything to apologise for.
I did resonate, I think just with me being older, did resonate Roy's story this time more. I think, yeah, it just didn't, I think I was playing on my phone quite a lot during this, so I can't give it a higher score. That gives us an overall score of 3.23750, which is probably lower than I thought it would be. I thought there'd be more champions over here.
Let down by the small screen score. Yeah, not for the small screen, I think.
That's the biggest drop in points there.
Yeah, I'm happy with over 3.
To be fair, I think a lot of Spielberg's films would not do well on a small screen. I can't remember what Jaws scored. We'll find out. But yes, Paul, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks for bringing Close Encounters, because I'm not sure if I would have watched it if you hadn't chosen it. That's part of why we do this podcast, is to get myself and Helen out of our comfort zones and watch these films. Remind everyone where we can find you online, where your podcast is, the name of your podcast, and say goodbye to all of the listeners.
Sure. Okay. So yeah, so our podcast is Have You Seen This? Seen is S-C-E-N-E. You can find it anywhere where you get your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at @SeenThis_pod. On Facebook and Insta, you can find us at SeenThisPod. And if you want to drop us an email, SeenThisPod@gmail.com.
Yeah, likewise, Paul. Thank you so much for recommending Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Even though we got it wrong, it was good to catch up that classic. Yeah, thank you so much, guys. This has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Bye!
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
just heard a Stripped Media production.